Chapter 14. The Hall Farm. Evidently that gate is never opened, for the long grass and the great hemlocks grow close against it, and if it were opened, it is so rusty that the force necessary to turn it on its hinges would be likely to pull down the square stone-built pillars, to the detriment of the two stone lionesses which grin with a doubtful carnivorous affability above a coat of arms surmounting each of the pillars. It would be easy enough, by the aid of the nicks in the stone pillars, to climb over the brick wall with its smooth stone coping, but by putting our eyes close to the rusty bars of the gate, we can see the house well enough, and all but the very corners of the grassy enclosure. It is a very fine old place, of red brick, softened by a pale powdery lichen, which has dispersed itself with happy irregularity, so as to bring the red brick into terms of friendly companionship with the limestone ornaments surrounding the three gables, the windows, and the door place. But the windows are patched with wooden panes, and the door, I think, is like the gate that is never opened. How it would groan and grate against the stone fire if it were. For it is a solid, heavy, handsome door, and must once have been in the habit of shutting with a sonorous bang behind a liveried lackey, who had just seen his master and mistress off the grounds, in a carriage and pair. But at present one might fancy the house in the early stage of a chancery suit, and that the fruit from that grand double row of walnut trees on the right hand of the enclosure would fall and rot among the grass, if it were not that we heard the booming bark of dogs echoing from great buildings at the back. And now the half-weaned calves that have been sheltering themselves in a gorse-built hovel against the left-hand wall come out, and set up a silly answer to that terrible bark, doubtless supposing that it has reference to buckets of milk. Yes, the house must be inhabited, and we will see by whom, for imagination is a licensed trespasser. It has no fear of dogs, but may climb over walls and peep in at windows with impunity. Put your face to one of the glass panes in the right-hand window. What do you see? A large open fireplace, with rusty dogs in it, and a bare boarded floor. At the far end, fleeces of wool stacked up. In the middle of the floor, some empty corn bags. That is the furniture of the dining room. And what through the left-hand window? Several clothes horses, a pillion, a spinning wheel, and an old box wide open, and stuffed full of colored rags. At the edge of this box there lies a great wooden doll, which, so far as mutilation is concerned, bears a strong resemblance to the finest Greek sculpture, and especially in the total loss of its nose. Near it there is a little chair, and the butt end of a boy's leather long-lashed whip. The history of the house is plain now. It was once the residence of a country squire, whose family, probably dwindling down to mere spinsterhood, got merged in the more territorial name of Donnithorne. It was once the Hall, it is now the Hall Farm. Like the life in some coast town, that was once a watering place, and is now a port, where the genteel streets are silent and grass-grown, and the docks and warehouses busy and resonant, the life at the Hall has changed its focus, and no longer radiates from the parlor, but from the kitchen and the farmyard. Plenty of life there, though this is the drowsiest time of the year, just before hay harvest. And it is the drowsiest time of the day too, for it is close upon 3 by the sun, and it is 3:30 by Mrs. Poyser's handsome 8-day clock. But there is always a stronger sense of life when the sun is brilliant after rain, and now he is pouring down his beams, and making sparkles among the wet straw, and lighting up every patch of vivid green moss on the red tiles of the cow shed, and turning even the muddy water that is hurrying along the channel to the drain into a mirror for the yellow-billed ducks, who are seizing the opportunity of getting a drink with as much body in it as possible. There is quite a concert of noises. The great bulldog, chained against the stables, is thrown into furious exasperation by the unwary approach of a cock too near the mouth of his kennel, and sends forth a thundering bark, which is answered by two foxhounds shut up in the opposite cowhouse, The old top knotted hens, scratching with their cheeks among the straw, set up a sympathetic croaking as the discomfited cock joins them, a so with her brood, all very muddy as to the legs, and curled as to the tail, throws in some deep staccato notes. Our friends the calves are bleeding from the home croft, and, under all, a fine ear discerns the continuous hum of human voices. For the great barn doors are thrown wide open, and men are busy there mending the harness, under the superintendence of Mr. Goby, the pit-haw, otherwise saddler, who entertains them with the latest Treddleston gossip. It is certainly rather an unfortunate day that Alick, the shepherd, has chosen for having the wit-haws, since the morning turned out so wet, and Mrs. Poyser has spoken her mind pretty strongly as to the dirt which the extra number of men's shoes brought into the house at dinner time. Indeed, as he has not yet recovered her equanimity on the subject, though it is now nearly 3 hours since dinner, and the house floor is perfectly clean again, as clean as everything else in that wonderful house place, where the only chance of collecting a few grains of dust would be to climb on the salt coffer and put your finger on the high mantel shelf on which the glittering brass candlesticks are enjoying their summer sinecure. For at this time of year, of course, everyone goes to bed while it is yet light, or at least light enough to discern the outline of objects after you have bruised your shins against them. Surely nowhere else could an oak clock case and an oak table have got to such a polish by the hand. Genuine elbow polish, as Mrs. Poyser called it, for she thanked God she never had any of your varnished rubbish in her house. Hetty Sorrel often took the opportunity, when her aunt's back was turned, of looking at the pleasing reflection of herself in those polished surfaces, for the oak table was usually turned up like a screen, and was more for ornament than for use, and she could see herself sometimes in the great round pewter dishes that were ranged on the shelves above the long deal dinner table, or in the hobs of the grate, which always shone like jasper. Everything was looking at its brightest at this moment, for the sun shone right on the pewter dishes, and from their reflecting surfaces pleasant jets of light were thrown on mellow oak and bright brass, and on a still pleasanter object than these, for some of the rays fell on Dinah's finely molded cheek, and lit up her pale red hair to auburn, as she bent over the heavy household linen which she was mending for her aunt. No scene could have been more peaceful if Mrs. Poyser, who was ironing a few things that still remained from the Monday's wash, had not been making a frequent clinking with her iron and moving to and fro whenever she wanted it to cool, carrying the keen glance of her blue-gray eye from the kitchen to the dairy, where Hetty was making up the butter, and from the dairy to the back kitchen, where Nancy was taking the pies out of the oven. Do not suppose, however, that Mrs. Poyser was elderly or shrewish in her appearance. She was a good-looking woman, not more than 38, of fair complexion and sandy hair, well-shapen, light-footed. The most conspicuous article in her attire was an ample checkered linen apron, which almost covered her skirt, and nothing could be plainer or less noticeable than her cap and gown, for there was no weakness of which she was less tolerant than feminine vanity and the preference of ornament to utility. The family likeness between her and her niece Dinah Morris, with the contrast between her keenness and Dinah's seraphic gentleness of expression, might have served a painter as an excellent suggestion for a Martha and Mary. Their eyes were just of the same color, but a striking test of the difference in their operation was seen in the demeanor of Trip, the black and tan terrier, whenever that much suspected dog unwarily exposed himself to the freezing Arctic ray of Mrs. Poyser's glance. Her tongue was not less keen than her eye, and, whenever a damsel came within earshot, seemed to take up an unfinished lecture, as a barrel organ takes up a tune, precisely at the point where it had left off. The fact that it was churning day was another reason why it was inconvenient to have the wit-haws, and why, consequently, Mrs. Poyser should scold Molly the housemaid with unusual severity. To all appearance Molly had got through her after-dinner work in an exemplary manner, had leaned herself with great dispatch, and now came to ask, submissively, if she should sit down to her spinning till milking time. But this blameless conduct, according to Mrs. Poyser, shrouded a secret indulgence of unbecoming wishes, which she now dragged forth, and held up to Molly's view with cutting eloquence. Spinning, indeed. It isn't spinning as you'd be at, I'll be bound, and let you have your own way. I never knew your equals for gallusness. To think of a jello your age wanting, to go and sit with half a dozen men. I'd have been ashamed to let the words pass over my lips, if I'd been you. And you, as have been here ever since last Michaelmas, and I hired you at Treadless and Status, without a bit o' character as I say, you might be grateful to be hired in, that way to a respectable place. And you knew, no more o' what belongs to work, when you come here than the mockin' eye the field. As poor a two-fisted thing as ever I saw, you know you was. Who taught you to scrub a floor, I should like to know. Why, you'd leave the dirt in heaps I the corners anybody would think you'd never been brought up among Christians. And as for spinning, why, you've wasted as much as your wage I the flax you've spoiled learning to spin. And you've a right to feel that, and not to go about as gaping, and as thoughtless as if you was beholding to nobody. Comb the wool for the witaws, indeed. That's what you'd like to be doing, is it? That's the way with you, that's the road you'd all like to go, headlongs to ruin. You're never easy till you've got some sweetheart as is as big a fool as yourself. You think you'll be finally off when you're married, I dare say, and have got a three-legged stool to sit on, and never a blanket to cover you, and a bit o' oatcake for your dinner, as three children are a-snatching at. I'm sure I donna want tea go why the witaws, said Molly, whimpering, and quite overcome by this Dantean picture of her future, ennui lays used to comb the wool for an at Mr. Otley's, and so I just axed thee. I donna want to set eyes on the witaws again. I wish I may never stir if I do. Mr. Otley's, indeed. It's fine talking o' what you did at Mr. Otley's. Your missus there might like her floors dirted why witaws for what I know. There's no knowing what people wanna like such ways as I've heard of. I never had a gel come into my house as seemed to know what cleaning was. I think people live like pigs, for my part. And as to that Betty as was dairymaid at Trent's, before she come to me, she'd all left the cheeses without turning from week's end to week's end, and the dairy thralls, I might ha' wrote my name on them, when I come downstairs after my illness, as the doctor said it was inflammation it was a mercy I got well of it. And to think o' you're knowing no better, Molly, and been here a-going I 9 months, and not for want o' talking to, neither and what are you standing there for, like a jackass's run down, instead o' getting your wheel out? You're a rare un for sitting down to your work a little while after it's time to put by. Money, my iron's twice told, peace put it down to warm. The small chirruping voice that uttered this request came from a little sunny-haired girl between 3 and 4, who, seated on the high chair at the end of the ironing table, was arduously clutching the handle of a miniature iron with her tiny fat fist, and ironing rags with an assiduity that required her to put her little red tongue out as far as anatomy would allow. Cold, is it, my darling? Bless your sweet face. Said Mrs. Poyser, who was remarkable for the facility with which she could relapse from her official objurgatory to one of fondness, or of friendly converse. Ever mind. Mother's done her ironing now. She's going to put the ironing things away. Money, I told Ike to do into the barn to Tommy, to see the widowed. No, 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 Toddy'd get her feet wet, said Mrs. Poyser, carrying away her iron. Into the dairy, and see Cousin Eddie make the butter. I told Ike a bit o' pump take, rejoined Toddy, who seemed to be provided with several relays of requests, at the same time, taking the opportunity of her momentary leisure to put her fingers into a bowl of starch, and drag it down so, as to empty the contents with tolerable completeness onto the ironing sheet. Did ever anybody see the like? Screamed Mrs. Poyser, running towards the table, when her eye had fallen on the blue stream. The child's a lazy mischief, If your back's turned a minute, what shall I do to you, you naughty naughty gel? Toddy, however, had descended from her chair with great swiftness, and was already in retreat towards the dairy with a sort of waddling run, and an amount of fat on the nape of her neck which made her look like the metamorphosis of a white suckling pig. The starch having been wiped up by Molly's help, and the ironing apparatus put by, Mrs. Poyser took up her knitting which always lay ready at hand, and was the work she liked best, because she could carry it on automatically as she walked to and fro. But now she came and sat down opposite Dinah, whom she looked at in a meditative way, as she knitted her gray worsted stocking. You look THM Joyer and Judith, Dinah, when you sit a-sewing. I could almost fancy it was 30 years back, and I was a little gel at home, looking at Judith as she sat at her work, after she'd done the house up. Only it was a little cottage, father's was, and not a big rambling house as gets dirty I one corner as fast as you clean it in another, but for all that, I could fancy you was your Aunt Judith, only her hair was a deal darker than yours, and she was stouter and broader I the shoulders. Judith and me lays hung together, though as he had such queer ways, but your mother and her never could agree. Ah, your mother little thought as she'd have a daughter just cut out after the very pattern o' Judith, and leave her an orphan to, for Judith to take care on, and bring up with a spoon, when she was in the graveyard at Stoniton. I lay said that o' Judith, as she'd bear a pound weight any day, to save anybody else carrying ounce. And she was just the same from the first o' my remembering her. It made no difference in her, as I could see, when she took to the Methodists, only she talked a bit different, and wore a different sort o' cap. But she'd never in her life spent a penny on herself more than keeping herself decent. She was a blessed woman, said Dinah. God had given her a loving, self-forgetting nature, and he perfected it by grace. And she was very fond of you too, Aunt Rachel. I often heard her talk of you in the same sort of way. When S.E. had that bad illness, and I was only 11 years old, she used to say, you'll have a friend on earth in your Aunt Rachel, if I'm taken from you, for S.E. has a kind heart, apostrophe and I'm sure I found it so. I don't know how, child, anybody 'ud be cunning to do anything for you, I think. You're like the birds O.T.H. air, and live nobody knows how. I'd ha been glad to behave to you like a mother's sister, if you'd come, and live I this country, where there's some shelter and victual for man and beast, and folks don't live on the naked hills, like poultry a-scratching on the gravel bank. And then you might get married to some decent man, and there'd be plenty ready to have you, if you'd only leave off that preaching, as is 10 times worse than anything your Aunt Judith ever did. And even if you'd marry Seth Bede, as is a poor wool-gathering Methodist and never liked to have a penny beforehand, I know your uncle 'ud help you with a pig, and very like a cow, for he's allays been good natured to my kin, for all they're poor, and made 'em welcome to the house, and 'ud do for you, I'll be bound, as much as ever he'd do for Hetty, though she's his own niece. And there's linen in the house as I could well spare you, for I've got lots o' sheeting and table clothing, and toweling, as isn't made up. There's a piece o' sheeting I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.